This fall, fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at minkycouture.com.
Hello, friends. How are you? Sorry, that was a weird, like, whispery, whimsical thing. I don't know why I did it like that. But anyway, hi. How do I find you? Well, I hope. Shall I paint the picture of what I'm doing? I've just sent my 12-year-old upstairs to brush his teeth. It is Sunday evening in the Bowman Smith household, and everybody can't quite believe that it's Sunday already and we're about to jump into another week. But I've escaped for a few minutes to share the introduction for a brand new episode of my beloved podcast, Soundtracking, with me, Edith Bowman. Thank you so much for your time. I thought I would, just before we get into this brand new episode, which I'm so excited to share with you, just a bit of an idea of some of the guests we've got coming up that I've already recorded and really hoping to get the chance to chat to. Obviously, we are a couple of weeks away from London Film Festival, which I like to refer to as crazy season. I'm so excited about the films that are going to be on show and who we potentially get the chance to chat to. But already in the can and ready to share with you, I have Brett Goldstein talking about his film All of You that's out in cinemas now. You should go and see it. You will cry. It's a really lovely take on a romantic drama with comedy. I loved chatting to Brett. Going to share that with you. Stephen Knight, who is the man behind House of Guinness that's up on Netflix now. You should definitely go and check that out. Brilliant cast, brilliantly written. And once again, in a kind of similar vein to Peaky, just got a really great contemporary approach to music that fits in so well with storylines and narrative and themes. It's really clever. Rebecca Miller, a filmmaker, has made the most beautiful, I think it's 6-part, documentary series about Martin Scorsese. And she's an amazing filmmaker in her own right. She's also the daughter of Arthur Miller and wife of Daniel Day-Lewis. I mean, come on. Speaking of which, their son has made a fantastic film, Anemone, which dragged his old man out of retirement. So we're all winning, really, in this scenario. Anyway, Rebecca was a joy to chat to, so I'm looking forward to sharing that with you. I'm going to be chatting to whole team behind this really beautiful film called I Swear, which is a true story about this young lad who developed Tourette's and went on and still does fight really hard for all those people who live with that condition. So the film's really beautiful, great cast, some real kind of Scottish legends in there like Peter Mullen and Shirley Henderson, but then you've got Maxine Peake in there as well. It's so great. So I'm going to chat to loads of them. We'll get a little bumper edition to share with you as well. Also, loads of great stuff up on our YouTube channel if you haven't subscribed to that yet. Jed Curzo, Damien and Jared Harris talking about their film Brave the Dark, which is really gorgeous. So go and subscribe if you haven't already. But I feel like I need a fanfare for this week's one. Ta-da! This is crazy. Our latest guest on Soundtracking is the legend that is Sean Penn. I know. He joins us to discuss his role in Paul Thomas Anderson's masterpiece, One Battle After Another. So the film stars Leonardo DiCaprio, Regina King, former Soundtracking guest Benicio del Toro, also Chase Infinity, who is absolutely superstar in the making. She is absolutely brilliant. And One Battle After Another tells the story of an ex-revolutionary who is kind of put in a position where he's got to rescue his daughter. And he was a revolutionary like 20 years ago. He's kind of, you know, forgotten and removed himself from that world. And it's such a clever film because it's a drama, but it's a comedy. It's an action film. It's so many things. And he's got to rescue his daughter from this kind of corrupt military official who is played so brilliantly by Sean Penn. He's one of those characters that is terrifying. He's funny. you sometimes feel sorry for him, even though you shouldn't. Just one of those really complicated characters. And Sean just embodies this character, the physicality of him, the hair and makeup, everything about the performance. It's so good. Paul has made an absolutely extraordinary film. It's taken him 20 years to make this film, and it's just a wonderful gift. I saw it at the Odeon Leicester Square on a huge screen with a huge sound system, and I'd highly recommend that you do the same. It is scored by the wonderful Johnny Greenwood, and if I could say that Johnny's score is everything that he's done for Paul Thomas Anderson, it's almost like the love child of all the previous scores that Johnny Greenwood's done for Paul Thomas Anderson is what the score is for One Battle After Another. It is exceptional. There's so much music in this film, and the score does so many things. It starts with score as well, so you're kind of immediately musically kind of on this journey. I loved so many things about this film. I really hope that I get the chance to talk to Paul around awards season. Let's be honest, he's going to be hopefully back in town. This film is definitely going to be up for awards. I was lucky enough to host a Q&A with a big old panel of them that included Paul, and he apologised for not having time to come on the podcast. We really are going to try and carve out time to chat before the end of the year. But in the meantime, I'm so thrilled to share this conversation that I had with Sean Penn. So as I said, One Battle After Another is scored by Johnny Greenwood, who, again, I'm also really hoping is going to get a little time to have a chat with us. He's obviously in the middle of Radiohead rehearsals at the minute, but he has given me a rough idea of when he might be around. So please, can you cross everything for me? In the meantime, we'll begin with his title cue. Incredible performance in this film, Sean. Yes. It's so great. It's absolutely knockout. It's terrifying. It's entertaining. I mean, when you work with someone like Paul Thomas Anderson, I heard you say that he has no relationship with convention. Mm. Is that a gift for an actor to have that playground then?
Yeah, I think one of the ways, one of the sort of new thoughts that I had that came out of it was we were trying to solve a storytelling problem. And I, you know, thought that I have a fairly original thought. And I shared it with him how we could solve it. And he said, I know that's what we're supposed to do. He has an allergy to any of those things, which automatically makes things more surprising.
Yeah. How much of this character was on the page? Because the performance is this whole 3D kind of just wonderful experience that we get. It's the physicality, it's the unspoken, it's the costume, it's the it's everything about it sort of thing, all these different elements that really bring him to life. How much of that was on the page and how much was that with collaboration with Paul in terms of getting ready for that first day of shooting?
If what I'm going to say is delusional...
Good.
Then it's a delusion that I guess Paul would have counted on my having.
Yeah.
The first movie I ever directed was based on a Bruce Springsteen song. Mm-hmm. So the song is, I don't know, 2 minutes and 40 seconds or whatever it is.
Recording stopped.
How rude. Highway patrolman. Yeah, let's go.
Yeah, and... the only relationship I have to it is that all of the two-hour movie was what I heard in the song. Mm. So from my point of view, that's what Bruce told me to do, right?
Yeah.
This was like that. So how much of that someone else would read, or if it was more of a private letter to me, mm-hmm. I don't know. I just know that it doesn't happen very often that you get something where you really feel like it's all there. Mm-hmm. Just occupy it.
And then you have all these other incredible performers to play with in this play.
Which was a big thing. That's a big, more than I have often get, or let's say extremely rare to have that kind of, maybe unique entirely, this on this level with this many actors operating at that level, you know, which I sort of would expect to be. Benicio del Toro, for example, I don't know if there's a more imaginative actor. Leo, who's just so solidly fantastic, he has this leadership built into his quality in terms of all of the influences on this led by Paul, mm-hmm. and none of them there but at the invitation of Paul, just make you feel comfortable that you can walk the high wire and it's worth it.
Paul mentioned last night when I asked him about Johnny Greenwood's score for the film that Johnny had kind of given him some stuff that he could play on set. Mm-hmm. And I wondered if that was something that was around when you were shooting and if it was helpful when you know.
It very much, whatever those guys have together, very much affirmed and articulated more clearly, sort of clarified what I sensed was the tonal shifts. Mm-hmm. And again, very surprising. You know, I listen to it now, it's the only thing it could be. But it was excitingly surprising, the musical attack on it that we were experiencing, particularly during dailies.
Yeah. Is music something you lean into or you have leaned into throughout your career, you know, around performance and finding characters or prepping for characters or...?
Well, the biggest part of that would be that, you know, I think that as an audience of my more formative years, let's say in the early 70s. By and large, the indelible films for me were very... music was a character in them, and many times songs were. You know, the obvious Harold and Maude or The Graduate and that sort of thing, Coming Home. Huh. So I think that I have an automatic affinity toward that. Of course, I can be very impressed by and moved by films that have the restraint, and not to use it also, it's just... attack and different kinds of projects, but I think that I tend to where I can get music, I think I choose it. I like having that addition to it, to the what's at play.
Yeah, you mentioned a Springsteen track from The Indian Runner, mm-hmm. and I'd really love to talk to you about you as a filmmaker and that relationship with music. I've been doing this podcast, I launched it 10 years ago next year, to have a conversation about music and film and that relationship. And I think Into the Wild is possibly one of the films that I have mentioned the most as being one of my favourites for many reasons, but one of that being the music, you know, both Eddie's songs and Michael and Keith's score and stuff. And it's an honour to get the chance to ask you a little bit about that, if you don't mind.
Mm.
What do you remember about that process of finding what the music needed to be for that story and for that film?
Well, the book of Into the Wild, when I first read it, it so seemed to be everybody's story in one way or another, that, mm-hmm. you know, some connection to wanderlust and that kind of rite of passage of it. For men and women, there was some part of it that really connected. And I think that I knew right away that... the first song that sort of drove the images in my head was one I didn't end up using, but was during the writing of it, a big encouragement, which was the Yusuf Islam now, but then Cat Stevens, Miles from Nowhere.
Miles from nowhere, guess I'll take my time. Oh, yeah. To reach there, look up at the mountain I have to climb. Oh, yeah. to reach there. Lord, my body has been a good friend, but I won't need it when I reach the end. Miles from nowhere, I guess I take my time.
That I was very much connecting with that level of soulfulness of a voice and so on. So this pretty quickly led me to Ed, very American story for one thing. I wanted an American, but also Ed's voice is sort of the voice that I imagine mine to sound like in the shower. if I could communicate in song, yeah. It would sound like that. Lamentably, it doesn't. And also his soulfulness as a songwriter. And so I went up to Seattle and showed him a very early cut, not even of the whole film. And he connected immediately. And in the editing room, we would just get these little presents, these files that would come down from Seattle. And so he was writing in real time with our post-production. And I had made room for it, the script. In other words, there was another character in the movie, and that was going to be filled by the songs. Mm. I made it in terms of the pacing of the script, the timing it was indicated where the songs would be, and for the most part stayed with that. Yeah, I've said, you know, often that I'm a music and narration dependent director. And I think that's largely true.
I mean, Hard Sun is a song that I will listen to every week sort of thing. It's almost like a meditation in a way. It's kind of just makes me grateful, really. It's just a wonderful piece of music.
When I walk beside her, I am the better man. When I look to leave her, I always stagger back again. Once I built an ivory tower so I could worship from above. When I climbed down to be set free, she took me in again. There's a big hot sun beating on the beach, people, in a big hot world.
But going back to the Indian Runner then, that idea that song inspired a film, and what was the kind of, yeah, what was the journey of that, you know, in terms of hearing that piece of music, it connecting with you and it encouraging you to write and direct this story?
Well, I had heard the original song, Highway Patrolman, on a demo tape. At the time, I was living with Bruce's little sister, Pam.
No way.
Yeah.
I met her in Manchester. She's a photographer.
Right. Yes.
Yeah, I met her in Manchester.
So in our early 20s, we were a couple. And I had not met Big Brother Bruce. He was on the East Coast. But one night after several Heinekens and listening to that thing, I said, I got to talk to your brother. And so I think I had one movie that had come out, and Fast Times was going to come out, and he would have no idea who he was talking to. But what he would have is all the security in the world that if this kid that's dating his little sister is saying drunk on Heineken when he's waking me up in New Jersey at 3:30 in the morning, can I make a movie out of that song? I can safely say yes, it'll never happen. And he did. And then 8 years later, I just went ahead and wrote it. And I called up Bruce and I said, hey, remember that guy, me, that was dating your sister? And I said, would you read the script? And he read it, and he said, go for it.
My name is Joe Roberts. I work for the state. I'm a sergeant out of Burnville, barracks number 8. I always done an honest job, as honest as I could. I got a brother named Frankie, and Frankie ain't no good.
But I didn't use that song because he wrote a song about 1968. And so I was I had, you know, some of the greatest era of American songwriting to play throughout that movie.
Yeah.
Back when you could afford the song.
So expensive now. And but then speaking to Jack and David about how the music, you know, you've obviously got the story's got that connection to the song for you. How did you approach the score for that film then in terms of...
Well, that was so much relying on Jack Nietzsche and David Lindley and John Hammond. They were the heroes of the people who wrote those songs. And so I was just the beneficiary of their inspirations, and it was very easy to say, yes, that works in this scene.
It's got to be a bit more than that.
Well,
sure.
The other thing was Jay Cassidy, my editor, who has great taste in music and understands the blend of music, you know, and in the way that I value it.
Yeah.
And was able to bring an awful lot to the party as well.
Do you like that side of filmmaking, of working with and collaborating with the musicians and the composers on that side?
Oh, yeah, I love it. You have to be careful that you don't get drunk on it, because there's no such thing as a bad section of film played under a great piece of music. So you got to make sure that in context, you're staying with the mission.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Have you seen Deliver Me From Nowhere yet?
No, I'm looking forward to it.
It's quite special. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, in terms of the origins of that song being, mm-hmm. you know, being written and how and why and
right.
the environment right. that it was in and stuff.
Yeah,
it's a,
very good actors involved also.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the two Jeremys are extraordinary. And what about The Pledge as well, in terms of the music of that, and Hans Zimmer working on that, and Klaus as well?
Yeah, so it's funny, that one, when I was doing some work on the script, it wasn't my script, but I was kind of, I guess, making the movie my own to a degree, and I'm mostly in very practical ways, like it had been written for a very horizontal environment, let's say Minnesota kind of landscape or something like that, and I wanted a vertical environment, so I was... I was injecting the mountains into it. And as it rose into the mountains, I was listening to Hildegard von Bingen compositions. And there were things in the choral aspects of that and in the kind of, you know, spiritual transcendence. And then when I got with Hans Zimmer, we had one discussion. And again, there's a great story about John Huston being in a bar and someone coming up to him, some drunk coming up to him saying, you know, Huston, you're not so great. You know, 50% of directing is casting. And Huston said, 85. And that's true of the crew also. And I think if you make good decisions about your people, then you've made the decision that's going to answer the area that, you know, if I could write the music to my movies, I would.
Yeah.
But if you pick the people right, and that was a really exciting one. I think... partly because of the timing and the way the film was budgeted, I think we pretty much had to score a picture. So he had all his musicians in session. I'd sit on the floor. We had a big screen. We'd go to the scene, and they'd all play live and instinctively to it based on the themes that he'd written. That was great.
Like it, physical effect that have when you've been surrounded by musicians.
And they're like there being affected by what the actors are doing and playing with them. And,
yeah. And is it a different process for you when it's a documentary as opposed to, you know, a feature, you know, for Superpower and working with Justin on the composer on that? Was that, how did that differ, if it did, from, you know, from working on a feature?
It did differ in the sense that Ukrainian music was pretty new to me, and by Ukrainian music, that's not one thing, right? But understanding which parts of it that are great, you can find a lot of great music work. But the very first cutting of the movie, I had gotten, you know, I had a co-director on that, and because we were not making the film we set out to make, and I had no idea, we had no idea going in that it was going to be about a war. We were going to make this light little coverage of this comedic actor turned president, and then Putin had different ideas for the movie. So I had not scheduled my life to be very hands-on in the putting together the assembly. And most of the map of what happened with Jonathan there was done with Aaron Kaufman. And then I came in and I was able to, it was almost, in a sense, it's a lot easier to script doctor than it is to script. And so then it took a long time with the cut because the story was changing all the time. And it took a lot more trips back than was expected. One had to clear their schedule in ways unexpected. So I didn't work closely with him. I worked closely with the work he had delivered.
Yeah. Question. It's not an odd one, but Lockjaw, does he listen to music? What kind of music is Lockjaw into?
I have this thing, you'll forgive me, that I will never forget sitting down in a hotel between a bathroom and a bedroom and a hotel room, dripping wet from the shower, reading the script to One Battle After Another the first time. And I am determined that even though others may, I don't want to take one bit of that experience away from the audience or put anything in their heads that they don't get, like I did, directly from the script. They can have it directly from the movie and see it their way.
I like it. Can I give you my interpretation?
Yeah.
He doesn't listen to music because it makes him feel.
I think it's as good an interpretation as any. But it would be great if you know, but it's like the David Bowie talked, and in Brett Morgan's documentary, When Age Daydream, great.
Yeah, great film.
And he talks about, you know, that the audience of his music put so much more depth into it than he had intended. And what a great thing when they do. So I'm hoping that for Paul's movie, because he's certainly offered it.
Yeah, you've all created something really, really special. Thanks for your time, Sean.
Thank you.
From the score to One Battle After Another, that's French 75, rounding off this latest episode of Soundtrackin' with Sean Penn, everybody. Sean Penn. I got to speak to Sean Penn about Into the Wild. Pinch me, someone. My huge thanks to Sean for taking the time to talk to us. As I said, One Battle After Another is on general release now. You really have to go and see it in the cinema. It is a phenomenal piece of work. Great collaboration, just great work from everybody involved. If you want to hear my previous chats with Paul Thomas Anderson or Johnny Greenwood or Benicio, you can head to edithbowman.com, where you can find every single episode of the podcast. Follow us on your socials. We're at Soundtrackin' UK, and do subscribe to our YouTube channel, which, as I said earlier, is called Soundtrackin' Extra. Next up, I am really thrilled to share an episode with you for a film that I think is very special. It's a brilliant film, but outside of it being a brilliant film, it's a really important film. The film's called Steve, and joining me to discuss the film is the star of the film, Cillian Murphy. the writer of the original book that the screenplay is based on, that then went on to write the screenplay, the wonderful Max Porter, and the gentleman who wrote the score, Jeff Barrow and Ben Salisbury. We have a super bonus Steve edition coming up for you next. I very much look forward to the pleasure of your company then.